Welcome to the BGR Review, where we take off our 21st century American lenses and instead look at current events, relationship issues, and cultural trends from a biblical perspective, and I am your host, Larry Solomon. So in this episode, we're going to be looking at an article that I found on Newsweek.com, written by Charlie Kirk, who's the founder and executive director at Turning Point USA. And the article is entitled, "You Can Disagree with His Language, But Trump Is Right About the Squad." Okay, and so recently, the President Trump tweeted out this tweet that like sent everybody into overdrive, and the author of this article even says like, you know, if there was a seismic political meter here, it would have registered among the highest of anything Trump has ever said since he began running in 2015. So here's the infamous tweet. So he said this, so interesting to see progressive, quote-unquote, Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt, and inept anywhere in the world, if they have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously tell the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? Then come back and show us how it is done. These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure Nancy Pelosi would be happy to quickly work out a free travel arrangements." So first things first. Okay, so yes, the president was wrong in the sense of, and this is the point of this man's article as well, say he may not articulately, he may not say things in exactly the right way, but the main point of his message is right, okay? So yes, is it true that only one of these women, Representative Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, was a refugee from Somalia, I believe. She's the only one that was an immigrant to the United States, okay? The rest of them were actually born in the United States. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Anasa Presley of Massachusetts. The other three women were born in the United States, okay? But I think that there's a couple of ways you can look at his tweet. I mean, he was looking at Omar, who has said some horrible, horrible things about the United States, and you know, and just that frustration, because they had said some things at I think it's a Netroots conference just a day or so before President Trump said what he said. And these people are these women are comparing detention centers for illegal immigrants that are flooding our southern border to concentration camps. And they are literally attacking the character of ICE agents and immigration officials and calling for the abolishment of the Homeland Security Department, of ICE, of CBP, of border enforcement. I mean, it's just, they're calling for these utterly ridiculous things, comparing America, putting illegal immigrants in detention centers, okay, to the Nazis taking Jews and putting them in concentration camps. Okay, first and foremost, because the concentration part really, really bugs me, okay? I love the Jewish people, and as a Christian person, especially Israel, the Bible says those who bless my people will be blessed, those who curse my people will be cursed. I am a full-on Zionist. I support Israel's right to exist 100%, okay? I do not like it when people constantly throw out the Hitler and the Nazi stuff and all that. Is just utterly uncalled for and ridiculous. There's no comparison at all. In Nazi Germany, they were taking Jews from various areas, their home areas, whether it was in Poland or Germany or other European countries that they conquered, they were taking Jews from their homes, stealing all of their stuff, basically taking, if you've ever seen Schindler's List, I would encourage you to watch it. It really just shows you what happened with the horrors of the Holocaust. They were literally taking these people from their homes, Okay? And they were carting them off to be killed, taking all their belongings and giving it to other people or taking it for the Reich. Okay? That is not what is happening on the southern border. Okay? That is not what is happening. These people are coming from their homes. They have left their homes voluntarily. They were not taken from their homes. They have left their homes voluntarily. And people say, well, they're refugees. No, no. The vast majority of them are not true refugees. They're being told to come to the United States. Oh, you can have a better life. You can have a better economy. And they're using the asylum stuff. And a lot of them, it is absolutely not true. They're taking children with them to be, basically, hey, if you get there with a child, you know, they can only keep a certain amount of time. These people are coming to our country illegally. The Jews were residents of the countries they were in, many of them for hundreds of years, generations. And the Nazis systematically took them from their homes and put them in concentration camps and murdered them. Okay? That is not what we have done. We have arrested people. Our border enforcement agents have taken people and put them in detention centers. They're not torturing them. They're feeding them. They're clothing them. They're doing the best they can with the limited resources they have. And then that's another thing. These same four ladies are trying to strangle any money to help these people. Oh, there's deplorable conditions, but we're not going to give you a dime to fix it because we want to be able to keep complaining about it on TV every day. It is utterly ridiculous what these four men have been doing, calling for the abolishment basically of borders. You don't have a nation without borders, okay? You don't have a country anymore. And these women are socialists and globalists. They want, okay, take all the money from everybody, let's equally distribute it, which does not work. It violates human nature. That's why the communist countries, many of them collapsed. That's why Russia collapsed. It doesn't work. Okay? It violates human nature, and it violates the scriptures. The scriptures teach the concept of private property. That is what the 10th commandment is. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, his house, his manservant, his ox, or anything that is thy neighbor's. Okay? Private property. It is a biblical concept. Christ in the New Testament, when speaking of the landowner hiring people with different wages, do I not have the right to do with that, with what is my own, that what I will? Okay, private property is central in the scriptures, and it is a foundational principle of America. And this writer here, I mean, he gets into it, and he says this. He says, that these women, there's a quote here that I just really love from Charlie Kirk here, okay? He says, since these women have taken office, the squad, these four women, they have effectively used their intersectional identities as shelter from very deserved criticism. Trump is not criticizing these congresswomen because they are women of color. He's criticizing the ideas they espouse. They express the most outrageous statements of hatred against America, Israel, and the president, all while raising the shield of racism against the refutations of their destructive ideas. Or Ocasio-Cortez is an openly declared socialist. I won't mince words here, he says. All those who say they are socialist, while they may or may not be decent people and well-intentioned, are expressing an open hatred and hostility toward the United States of America. He goes on to say, Charlie Kirk goes on to say here, the United States was founded and built on the ideas of Aristotle and John Locke, while directly repudiating the ideas of Plato and Rousseau. The first thinkers gave birth to the Scottish and American Enlightenments, the latter to the bloody French Revolution and Karl Marx. Okay? And again, I don't agree with everything that John Locke taught, and I'll talk about that later, but the general ideas of freedom, of limited government, of the fact that the government has certain limits, The church has certain limits, and neither the government or the church can impede upon the rights of men ruling over their families, okay, of the husband, of the father. If you take those principles, I agree with him. Where I don't agree, and I'll talk about this in another article, is that Aristotle came up with the concept that we have today of adults and minors, or adults and children, So before Aristotle, throughout all of human history, in most every culture, not just European, you had three main classes of people. You had men, women, and children. Children had the least amount of rights, and they were totally underneath the authority of their parents. Women had more rights than children, but less rights than men, and men had the most rights. And men virtually, basically owned their wives and their children. And in an article I wrote on this topic about John Locke, I proved from the scriptures that biblically speaking, the social classes of men, women, and children, those three classes are biblically based, and that men having ownership over their wives and their children is biblically based. Now John Locke kind of messed with that, and he came up with the idea of adults and minors, or adults and children, that there's only two classes, not three, and that women, and he basically in many ways laid the foundation for women's rights, even though the founders did not accept that part of his teaching, and even he kind of wouldn't even fully accept it, his own teaching, the implications of it, okay? And it wouldn't be until, you know, the mid 1800s that the women's rights movement started to form, and using his ideas started to form feminism, okay? But I mean, like John Adams just laughed when his wife Abigail asked about giving women the right to vote. He said, "No way." He said, "If we give women the right to vote, they'll come to rule over men. We will come under the despotism of women." And that's actually what has actually happened. It's what's transpired. It's a soft despotism that a lot of people don't notice, okay? But we're going to notice more in the future here. But, as I said, not everything John Locke taught was wrong, but the ideas of freedom, of separation of power, of accountability, those are good biblical concepts. And the fact that, yes, kings had trampled the rights of men. Remember, God has established three spheres of authority, human spheres of authority: civil government, church, and the family. And neither one, any one of those three, cannot step on the other one's spheres. There's certain things that only belong to the church. There's certain things that only belong to civil government. And there's certain things that only belong to the family. And they all must respect each other's spheres of authority. And so from that perspective, yes, John Locke was showing how kings had trampled the rights of men, the private property rights of men, and other things. And those, for the most part, I agree with a lot of America's founding, but you got to look at America's, the way we were founded is very different than where we are today. The whole multiculturalism and socialism, all that came way later. That was not part of the founders' teaching. The founders didn't have feminism. They didn't agree with it. They didn't put it in there. They didn't agree with multiculturalism and all of this, and we need to have people from every part of the world. They actually were racist by modern standards with the first laws they passed, saying that only white people could become citizens of the United States, and it wasn't until later that non-whites could become citizens of the United States, okay? And only men, could vote and own property, and so I mean, America as it was originally founded was actually much closer to a biblical worldview, but I want to be careful here, because I just said something that may throw some people off, and I'm going to get into this in other articles, that's for the biblical gender roles, in other podcasts here on BJRLearning.com. I've said it before in the intros to BJR, the BJR Review. I do believe that nations throughout history, I mean, it's not just believe it, it's a historical fact. Nations throughout history were formed around three things: common ethnicity, common religion, and common language. And of course, the protection of the boundaries of the nation, which we don't even want to do today, okay? Today, we have people going, okay, there's no American, there's no ethnicity, there's no anything, there's only humans. That's it. And that's really the foundation of globalism. There's just humans. The squad would basically be people that would, if they were really being honest, and some of their statements even come close to saying it, that when you don't believe in borders, when you're just like everyone has a right to come to your country and do whatever they want, and you just believe in, there's just human beings, that's it. Okay? That is a foundation for socialism, secular humanism. That's the foundation for that. But when you understand that, yes, there are families, there are ethnicities, that nations are most unified Okay? When they have common ethnicities, when they have common religion, when they have common language. And I know if someone who's African American or Asian is listening to this, okay, or someone from the Middle East, Arabic or whatnot, or Indian listening to this, and you go, oh, that's racist, oh, that's horrible. No, I do not hate non-white people. And I do not think that white people are better than black people or Indian people or Asian people or Arabic people. I do not think that. But I do not believe, based upon history, that you can put everybody together from all these different ethnicities and not have strife, folks. Look at all the strife we've had as we've tried to increase this multiracialism and multiculturalism. No, you have to have a unified culture. It doesn't mean you can't have some differences, and a small amount of diversity is fine. But when you have a lot of diversity, that doesn't work, because diversity basically means division. When you have a lot of division, a lot of big differences in language, in ethnicity, in religion, when you have all of that, that is a breeding ground for just a society that's not unified, that will break apart eventually. Okay? So yeah, we're gonna have to be very creative and find some creative solutions in the future if we are to remain together. And I don't know that we will be able to, because when we have one race setting itself up against another, people say, oh, Donald Trump is setting whites up. Wait a minute. I could show you quotes all day long of blacks online saying that, oh, we need to stick together against the whites. I mean, you look at what this Ayanna Pressley, one of the squad members, said. She said this last weekend, and this is one of those things right before President Trump said his tweet. She said this, okay? Like the day before, I think. She said in a meeting, she said, we don't need any brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice. We don't need any black faces that don't want to be a black voice. So basically, this is what she's saying. And that's why they're using the term colored people now. They've switched to, instead of Africans, colored people. Because they're trying to make Hispanics, brown people, quote unquote, and blacks joined together as a coalition against whites. Now, they accuse us of racism, but is that not really racism? So basically, they are having more in common, okay, because we're the colored people group, we're the blacks and the Hispanics together. They're saying we have more in common with the quote-unquote colored people coming from Central American countries than we do with white people in our own country. And yes, three of these ladies were correct, that's correct to say, were born here. But they're actually aligning themselves with people that are colored like they are from countries not their own, as opposed to be aligning with their fellow white countrymen, going, hey, yes, we are Americans with you, and we believe we need to protect our borders. It's not about brown and black people versus white people. It's about Americans protecting their country, okay? So, but yet, they get a pass on this, and so they get to say, oh, yeah, we don't want any black faces that don't want to be a black voice. In other words, if you don't think, as a black person, that you're a victim of white people, and that white people owe you, and they need to pay for everything for you, give you free housing, everything, because your ancestors were slaves, then we don't want you talking. You just need to shut up. So you know what? If you're like Herman Cain or any of these other black conservatives, if you're like Alan Keyes or Larry Elder or Herman Cain or Condoleezza Rice, we don't want you to talk. You don't get to talk if you have conservative views and you believe that blacks need to take care of themselves and that blacks need to stop blaming whites for all of their problems, okay? That white people didn't go and make that black man go have a baby with a black woman out of wedlock and then run away and not be the father, where 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. That is a fact. And it is a fact that 50% of the violent crimes of robberies, rapes, murder in the United States are committed by less than 12% of the population, which is black. The total population of the country that's black is 12%. And most of the violent crimes and rape that occur is actually by black males, which is only 6% of the population. So 6% of the population commits about 50% of the murders, rapes, and robberies in the United States. And yet, it's our fault, though. It's our fault. There's not a there's no problem in the black community. There's nothing that they need to address. Where some of these conservative black men have said, "Yay, hey, we gotta take care of our own house here. We gotta work on the black family. We gotta support black churches. We have to get into the homes and we've got to encourage black men to stand up and be fathers and take responsibility and get married and take responsibility and raise these children, okay?" And keep them out of the gangs and keep them out of all of these problems. But these men need to shut up. From the squad's point of view, these men need to shut up because they're not toeing the line. They're Uncle Tom's, okay? All right? It's us versus the white people. It's us colored people, Hispanics and blacks versus the white people. And this is what Trump is addressing. I mean, like this author said, yes, he may say it in the wrong way. He may make some mistakes. Oh yeah, okay, yes. Three of them are from this country, but the socialism and the ideas they bring are imported from other countries where it does not work. Okay, this ideology is un-American, and it doesn't work. Socialism is un-American. Okay, and yeah, the whole thing, if you don't like this country, you can leave it. That's way predates Trump, okay? Again, he may have said it in an inarticulate way, but it predates Trump, all right? The idea, when people say, when they wear the t-shirts, I've seen it all the time with the bumper sticker, if you don't like America, leave, okay? What we mean, what people mean when they say that, is if you don't like how America was founded, if you think America was this evil country and that you have to fix it, it was founded on evil principles, evil white people, and you need to come in and fix it, okay? Then you could just go to some other place. That's what he's saying. If you think, oh, yeah, I was born in, but I think it's evil on our foundation, then go some other place. If you don't like how America was founded, go some other place, okay? Because the thing is that, you know, I mean, I get a kick out of this. It's like, you know, people be like, you come to America, you love the freedom that you have. Where did that freedom come from? That freedom, this country, this structure, the economy, everything that was set up, all the rules and everything we have, the free market, capitalism, the Bill of Rights, all of these things, what was it set up by? It was set up by evil old white men. The men that you trash every day in the news, that you say, white men, do this, white men. White men are the ones that founded a country that allows you, as a colored person, Hispanic or black, to say the stupid things that you say. And the hateful things that you say, and you go and attack policemen and border agents for doing their jobs, for enforcing the law, and you call borders immoral. That is idiotic. Borders have been there since the beginning of the world. You take down borders and this country will collapse. If we allow every single person, if we allow unlimited immigration into these, the United States, we will collapse. We do not have the resources and the culture cannot take that. That's why there was a certain point in American history in the early 1900s where they stopped immigration for a long time because we were trying to absorb the Irish and other immigrants that we had brought into the United States. We needed to acclimate them to the nation. And they recognized that you just can't have a flood of people come in, that the people have to respect the American culture, and they have to, I mean, immigrants back in the old days, they changed their names to be more American. Okay, they changed themselves to fit the culture, the American culture. They didn't expect the American culture to change to fit them. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have. We're not forcing people to follow the call. I mean, one of the examples I've talked about on my blog is that, you know, there was a huge influx of German immigrants, you know, in the 1800s, okay, right? But they came here and they respected the Anglo-British culture that established the United States, okay? When the United States was established in the 1700s, the vast majority, if you look at the censuses, the vast majority of the people here were of Anglo-Saxon descent. They were English, Welsh, Scottish, okay, and mostly English, but English, Welsh, Scottish, I mean, that was the overwhelming majority. So America was literally founded by Protestant Anglo-Saxons, okay? They formed this nation. So the immigrants that came later, like the Germans and the Irish, they came and respected. They came and learned to respect the American culture. They adopted the English language. They changed their names to be more English sounding. They respected the British Anglo-American culture. Okay? But then in the 20th century, you know, as of socialism coming in and then the multiculturalism of the 1960s, all of a sudden, people didn't have to respect the British Anglo-Protestant culture that started this country. It was totally disregarded. It was totally spit upon. And that's where we have all this division today, is because people have been allowed to spit on the British Anglo culture that started this country. Okay? That break-off group of Anglo-Saxons that came here, they were like, hey, we got some problems with the homeland. We don't like some things that are being done back there. We think it's wrong. We're going to start our own nation that's going to respect the rights of men, that's going to have a division between the separate... We're going to have, you know, respect the church and the state and the family. All these spheres, these spheres, three spheres of authority, will respect the separation between each other and the rights of each one. Okay? That's what they established. So in many ways, I respect that part. I mean, I think our founders left open the door for secularism. I'll talk about that in some other podcasts. I don't think it was perfect, but I do think overall that God blessed the founding of this country, and I think that we're going to need to make some changes if we're to last. I honestly do. Otherwise, we will not last. If we don't begin to fight against socialism, if we don't begin to fight against secular humanism and socialism in this country, we will break apart. Because Christians are not going to give up their faith. The secularists have this fantasy that they're going to be able to eventually eliminate Christianity. They're not. It's still stable. They're trying to tell us in the news, oh, it's going away. It's the narrative. It's going away. It's not going away. Okay? I have written a post on my blog that I'll probably do a review on, the myth that white Christian America is dying, that white Christians are going away, whites and Christian, that combination, that's going away, okay? Not true. Not true. And in that article, I go through statistics, and I show it's not true, and in fact, the trend could reverse because Christians, especially conservative Christians, have more children than liberals do, okay? There is a chance that actually we could absolutely, just by having more children over the next couple of decades, turn this nation around. Absolutely. More children equals more voters. And if we insulate our children and teach them the wrongs of socialism and all of this multicultural garbage, okay, and we teach them what the scriptures teach, okay, we can insulate them and from atheism and all these other false philosophies, secular humanism. We can eliminate it just by mere breeding them out. By mere just having more people, okay? We can turn this country around, but we have to get back to being fruitful and multiplying. As I've said many times, and even conservative Christians in some circles have not obeyed this command, and they're having like two children. Oh, we're just going to have two. No. You need to have like four children, five children, okay? We need to be being fruitful and multiply. We have a duty to do that. God says, very first command he gave to mankind, be fruitful and multiply. But again here, this squad here, okay, while Trump's comments may have been misplaced, okay, the fact is that Trump has done more for black people, okay? He's not racist at all. Look at the results. Don't look at his words. Look at the results of what he has done. I wasn't planning on doing this. I was planning on just this article, but I'm going to go on a really quick rabbit trail here because I could have done a podcast on this other article all by itself, but I'm going to tie it in here, you know, since we're talking about race here and Trump. There's an article on Newsmax.com, and I'm putting the link here for the audio as well, that is entitled Four Ways Trump Has Done More for African Americans Than Barack Obama. And it's written by Jack Brewer. Okay, and he is by no means a conservative. If you look at it, he's the guy who back in 2008 when Obama was running for president, he organized NFL players for Obama, and he's a black man, Jack Brewer. He's a black man, okay, and he's been a Democrat his whole life. He donated to Obama in both campaigns. He was a huge, like, Yes We Can guy, major Obama supporter. But I mean, I'm not going to read the whole article, but basically, he says Obama was all talk. He was all talk. I mean, he says in there, you know, Obama didn't brag about creating jobs for black people like Trump has. He bragged about putting people on food stamps. I mean, he says you can't make this up. He said he bragged about giving more food stamps than any president in history. Is that what you want to brag about? Do you want to brag about how many jobs you create or how many people you've put on food stamps? Food stamps, socialism, jobs, capitalism. And a job gives a man dignity. Food stamps takes away a man's dignity. Okay? And Jack Brewer recognizes this. He's like, you basically removed the dignity, and food stamps went overwhelmingly, you know, disproportionately to blacks during this period. And you basically, you undercut the incentive to work, that human beings need an incentive. And that's what capitalism recognizes and socialism denies. Socialism and secularism, oh, people are good. People are good, and they'll just go work if they can. They only don't work if they absolutely can't. That's not true. If you give somebody a handout and say, hey, here's this X number of dollars, or you can go work and make about the same amount of money, a lot of people are going to stay home and take the money. You remove their dignity when you do that. But, you know, Jack Brewer here, and he talks about how the first step, program that Trump put in that is reforming prisons and going, hey, if a guy was put in for a nonviolent crime and it was just he had a little bit of drugs on him or something like that, hey, let's get these guys out of prison. Okay? And I mean, this is disproportionately, he says here, affects blacks. So all these blacks are getting out of prison because of Trump. Because he's saying, hey, I don't think you should have to go to prison for that long or whatever. This isn't right. We should be reserving most of the prison space for violent criminals and not having, you know, breaking up families and other people because a guy, you know, had this little bit here or there. Okay? I mean, you can agree or disagree with the finer points of the policy, but he says here that he did this, and this very much disproportionately helped advantaged blacks more than anyone else, okay, when Trump did this. And then, you know, Obama talked about, you know, historically black colleges and universities, but he did almost nothing for them, okay? Where Trump comes in, and he's done more for funding for historically black colleges and universities in the first 2 years than any president has ever done, including Obama. Again, Obama all talk. And this is a black Democrat saying this, okay? For jobs, he talks about. He said, you know, Martin Luther King talked about jobs and freedom, okay? He said, you know, Trump has brought the unemployment rate for blacks to the lowest it's ever been. He's gotten blacks more jobs than any president has, including Obama. Okay? I mean, they're getting off food stamps, and they're working, and they're getting the dignity of work and a paycheck. Okay? And getting them off of welfare into work. I mean, he's done so much more for blacks than any president has in recent history. He just says here at the end, he says, Jack Bruce says this, it is even more interesting to see so many people who will support a policy initiated by the political affiliation they prefer, yet they lash out against the same policies when they are pushed by the opposite political party. Oh, how true that is. I mean, a lot of these things Trump is doing with detention, things like that, Obama did the same things. They even found out, like, where they took pictures of things at first with the cages, like that they were from the Obama era, okay, and all these getting immigrants, illegal immigrants out of the country, Obama was doing that. Now, if Trump goes to have ICE go around and do raids, oh, that's immoral, oh, that's wrong, oh, you can't do that, oh, that's horrible. And this guy says at the end, you know, well, as a lifelong Democrat, I say enough is enough. And from what I can see here, I got a feeling, I think this guy's probably going to, I don't see his exact word in here saying it, but I think he's probably going to end up voting for Trump. Because even though he doesn't agree with him on everything, he's saying this man has done more. I mean, he may say things that I don't like, but he's done more for blacks than any president in recent history has done. I mean, this man, he made commitments to the black community, Trump did, and he kept his word. When he was running for office, he made commitments to Jews as far as Israel. He kept his word. When do politicians do that? So as people go, oh, we don't like the way he sounds. We don't like the way, you know, and you get even some of these Republicans, oh, George Bush was so much more respectful and dignified. He just treated the office president so much better. Yeah, and George Bush did, in his entire 8 years, didn't do as much as Trump has done in 2 years. That is a fact. Trump has overturned the bureaucracy. He has made massive changes that no one has made to this country since FDR, basically. Since FDR and then before that, Lincoln. He has made massive changes. He has basically, I mean, he could, in effect, if he wins the next election, could reverse a lot of the socialism that came out of the New Deal. Not all of it. And even he has said, you know, he's never going to mess with Social Security. And all this kind of, so I'm not entertaining those kind of things. But what I'm saying is that the socialism that grew up out of that in the 60s and 70s and kept going, you know, and the overt socialism, I mean, it's just right there in your face of, like, Cortez and some of these other people. I mean, he is the man who's going to stand against that. And yes, is he imperfect? Does he say some things I don't always like? Is he thin-skinned sometimes? Yes. But you know what? God uses imperfect men. He has used imperfect leaders throughout history. And I honestly believe, and so do the Jews, that he is a vessel of God. The Jews are comparing him to Cyrus, who rebuilt Jerusalem, who helped reestablish Jerusalem for them after they were brought out by the Babylonians. Okay? Cyrus helped them. The pagan king Cyrus helped them, okay? So, I mean, yes, he's got a checkered past, Trump does. And he may not be a perfect man now, and he may do some things we disagree with or have said some things we disagree with as Christians. But the fact is, God is using him. Look at what he has done for evangelical Christians. Look how he surrounds himself with evangelical Christians. He has done more for pro-life than many presidents have in the past. He has done more for blacks. He has promised he did, and he did. He has done more for Jews, and he did. And he's been having people trying to stop him the entire time, every way. You have activist courts every way going after him. I heard someone talking on the radio a while back. They said that the way that the circuit courts, the federal circuit courts, are acting is not the way the founders, this was a conservative legal scholar on the radio, this is not what the founders intended for circuit courts. Circuit courts were only supposed to make decisions for their area of the country, their circuit, not nationwide injunctions. Because it was meant to be where circuits could have different rulings, where the circuit in Georgia could have a different circuit than the one in California or whatever. And then the disagreements between the circuits would be settled by the Supreme Court. But today, we have circuit courts acting as if they are the Supreme Court. They're making blanket decisions for the entire country, and they're basically overturning the decisions of the elected president of the United States every chance they get. From a political perspective, it's not constitutional what they are doing. They are stepping out of line, and I would love to see President Trump step in and look at impeachments. I mean, judges can be impeached, Okay, I think it was Thomas Jefferson who went to try and impeach a judge. I don't know if he actually did or not, but the fact is, if you are acting out of line as a judge, if you are using your position as a judge for political purposes, okay, or you as a circuit court are making blanket injunctions over the entire country when you are only to be making injunctions for your district, I think people need to step up. I think the judiciary needs to be challenged. The Supreme Court's like, oh, we don't want to, we can't do, no. There's no Republican or Democrat judges, I think Roberts said. No, there are. There are absolutely Republican and Democrat judges. You're blind if you don't see that, okay? That is absolutely true, okay? There is political bias in the judiciary, and there always has been since the beginning of this country. And you want to say, oh, no, they're supposed to be justices blind. They're not political. That's why we don't have part. No, they are. They may take the nameplate off Democrat or Republican, but they are still a Democrat or Republican. It's a philosophy that you bring with you. That philosophy is still there in when you're ruling. And as a conservative judge, you're like, hey, I have to go with the original intent of the founders. And the Democrat, the liberal judge goes, no, I can just, it's a living document. I can just kind of change it to what I think it needs to be so that I can, I can invent new rights so that I can impose social policy on the country, even policy that the majority of the American people would never vote for. If you want to change the culture, or if you want to change the rules for the country, you don't change it as a judge, an unelected judge on the court. There's a process in the Constitution for amendments to change it, and it's a very difficult process for a reason. Okay, and there's a lot of policies in this country over the last half century or more that have come not by the will of the people, but by the will of just a few unelected judges. And that is not right, and that needs to stop, and it needs to be challenged. So I hope that I mean, this has been a very, very political episode, but I do believe that there is absolutely an intersection, or intersectionality, as our liberal friends love the word, between biblical gender roles, between biblical philosophies, or between biblical doctrines, and politics, and how we organize our churches and our families. Because a lot of people, we shouldn't mix religion and politics. We shouldn't mix church. No. Preachers used to preach from their pulpits about elections and about consequences, because politics involve morality, folks. And what is our source of morality supposed to be as Christians? The Bible. So we should care about politics, we should care about morality, and we should care about the policies of our nation, whether they are moral or not, whether they respect the God-given rights and freedoms, whether the policies of this nation respect the concepts of private property rights, the rights of husbands and fathers, the rights of a nation to protect itself, to protect its borders, its language, its culture. Okay, that these things are there. That the fact that God, it is God, not man, that created the concept of nations. The Bible says he divided the sons of Adam to their various places. He created the nations. The Bible tells us this, okay? Nationalism is biblical. Globalism is anti-biblical. Capitalism is biblical. Socialism is unbiblical. So yes, there is absolutely an intersection between the scriptures and politics, and we cannot separate the two. And as Christians, we cannot bury our head in the sand. We have to realize this truth. I'm going to get into this more in other podcasts and articles, but anyway, I just wanted to say that, thank you for listening today, and I hope that, if you're somebody who's doubted Trump for a little while, not sure, but you're looking at the other side going, whoa, man, they're way off the bus here, realize he's an imperfect man. It's okay for you to not agree with every single tweet he does. It's okay for you to think that was inarticulate or whatever, but don't judge the man by his tweets. Judge him by his actions. Judge him by what he has done for the nation of Israel. Look at this as a Christian. This man did what all these other presidents said they would do, and he actually did it. They didn't do it. He moved our embassy to Jerusalem. He recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and put our embassy there. Okay? This man has done more for Christians and Jews, and evangelical Christians especially, Bible-believing conservative Christians, to protect us than many others. Now, yeah, I don't agree with him on... I think he's too soft on the LGBT folks, and I think he tries to dance the fence between them and evangelicals, okay? Again, not perfect. But God uses imperfect vessels for his glory, okay? There are no perfect politicians. There's not going to be any perfect president, okay? And you have to remember, when you vote for president, you're not voting for the pastor of your church, okay? The qualities I'm going to look for in the pastor of my church are going to be very, very different than the qualities I'm going to look for in my president, okay? A civil leader, the president of the United States, it's a different thing than the pastor of a church, okay? And you have to realize that. So, again, thanks for listening. May God be with you. May God bless you, and come back for the next episode.